Bienvenidos and welcome to the Familia FFP podcast. This is Jorge Martin, and today I'm joined by a very special guest, an invitado de lujo, as we like to say in Spanish. He's one of the co-owners of Fantasy Points, which has an incredible treasure trove of information and talented experts just like him sharing their knowledge and experience. He's worked for NFL Network, Fantasy Gurus, Roto World. I mean, just big names. He's the real deal. I'm welcoming in, again, real deal, Graham Barfield. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good, man. It's good to talk to you. Good to finally link up here.
No, this is great. This is great. And, you know, I guess we missed each other a little bit on your California time.
Yeah.
What, you know, how has that move been to the Rocky Mountains?
It's definitely been a huge change of pace. My wife and I moved to Culver for my job, the NFL Network, in 2018, and we lived there for 3 years. It was actually great because, like, one of our like best friends from middle school actually relocated to Culver, pretty much like a stone's throw away from where we were living, that same year. So we had like some good friends out there that we got to kind of like catch back up with and live close together again, which was nice. Colorado is definitely a big change of pace. We were talking a little bit before the show, but like, California is so warm and just like perfect all the time. And here this week in Colorado, like we got like 2 or 3 inches of snow, I want to say, on like Monday or Tuesday. And then today it was like, or yesterday it was like 80 and sunny. Colorado weather is definitely a lot moodier, but it's awesome. I grew up in the mountains in North Carolina, so it's kind of nice to be back in the snow and in colder weather. I guess that's kind of where my blood's at.
We'll get into Mexican food a little bit later, but there, I know you still should be able to find some good stuff in Colorado. It is called Colorado for a reason.
Yeah. The food here is awesome. I haven't had a bad meal yet, but I definitely miss. There's a couple amazing taco places like right around the corner from where we're at. I definitely miss the food in California for sure. That's a big part of it.
Oh, well, we're going to get into that. But, you know, first off, I mean, it's so great, to see where you are right now. But when did the love for fantasy football just kind of start? And kind of when did you think of the possibility of diving into being an analyst?
I've always loved sports in general. Like, it's been a part of my life since I can ever remember. Baseball is my first true passion. I played baseball throughout, elementary, middle, high. I was a pitcher, and I guess that was my first true love. But I've always loved all sports. Growing up, my dad and his whole side of the family were huge Florida State football Seminole fans, and probably watched like thousands of hours of Florida State football growing up as a kid. So that definitely fostered some of it. I grew up, like I said, in North Carolina, like West North Carolina. So I didn't really have like a geographical team because, it was the Panthers, but the Panthers are new. I was born in the early 90s, so they were still kind of new, and everything else was kind of, I think I fostered a love of players over teams. So I think that's kind of helped me in fantasy. To be honest though with you, like, I never thought I'd be a full-time fantasy analyst. I mean, the whole concept still blows my mind. I've always loved sports, always loved, following and tracking stats. I mean, I would, always read the USA Today at like 6 years old, just check out baseball box scores. And I think I probably joined my first fantasy league when I was like fifth, sixth grade. So I've been following sports full time pretty much my whole life.
That's amazing. And, it's funny what you were saying about like following players over teams.
Right.
I know for me, when the Rams left in 95, and I was, I was a dyed-in-the-wool Ram fan from the time I was 10 years old. But when they left, it was kind of like, I think I felt like fantasy football was what kept me tied to the NFL during that time. And actually, I've heard that's actually what kept it alive in a lot of LA. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, what's crazy in LA is there's way more Raider fans than Rams fans. There's way more. It's like double the amount. Like, people don't realize that the Raiders still have, like, that's where the contingency of the Raiders fans are, is LA. And it's ironic too that Vegas is closer, if you catch the traffic right, Vegas is closer to LA than Oakland. But yeah, I mean, I think that's a big part of it too. I feel for the people in St. Louis now too. They had the Rams for all those years, and the team moved out. But yeah, I know a couple people in St. Louis, they say the same thing, you know, that fantasy is really what's kept them attached to the NFL.
Well, I will say they got a Super Bowl out of the Rams, so I'm still waiting for mine.
It's true. It's true. They did. Greatest show on turf, baby.
Yeah, but I'm not gonna complain. I grew up a Laker and Dodger fan, so they took care of me on the other side.
Your Dodgers, man, they are gonna be really tough to beat. That Dodgers rotation is just unbelievable. It's kind of crazy. Like, I think once Bauer and Buehler get going, I think Kershaw end up being the three, which is crazy to think about.
You know, especially considering where he's been. And I've known Kershaw. I met Kershaw his first day, the day he signed in 2006 at 18 years old with a buzz cut and everything like that. So, to see his rise and he's still so good. But yeah, Buehler and Bauer. Bauer is just different enough that he's still fun. He's still so fun.
Yeah. Bauer's strikeout strut is just, he has so much swag on the mound. He's going to be so much fun. He's going to be so much fun.
Did you have one when you pitched?
Oh, I didn't strike out enough people. So no, if I struck somebody out, I was pleasantly surprised.
Even to close out an inning, even if you got one to close out an inning.
I was the setup man. I could throw really hard, but I had no off speed pitches. Like, I didn't know where they were going. So I just tried to like be a fly ball pitcher, just keep my fastball high. But no, I definitely don't have, I was not good enough to warrant a case strut.
Well, you know, back to fantasy. I mean, that early love and just being able to, you know, just loving the game so much and getting good, about what time was it? I mean, that you really thought, okay, I want to throw my hat in the ring on this.
College, probably around there. I just always, I don't know. I think I was working this job in accounting. So I had a lot of time on like Excel and all the various accounting, you know, softwares that we used. And I always had a love for numbers and data and stats, like I was saying. So I had a lot of time to kind of like learn how to just basically teach myself how to use Excel. And I'd always enjoyed writing, but I never really considered myself to be that good of a writer. I think I was always like competent, but never good. But it was like college, and I was just like, you know what? You know, I've been on Twitter for 6-8 months. I'll just start this little blog and start writing about fantasy, just anything that comes to my mind. So I'd say it was probably around college. I had a lot of free time in the summer to like, you know, hone in on some articles and stuff. Which is that's pretty much the premier time to write off season stuff is during the summer. So yeah, my sophomore, junior year, you know, that's kind of where it started for me. And then from there on out, got a job. My first job was with this small little blog out of Vegas. It was like a Vegas insider blog. I wrote for them for a little while. Then worked for JJ Zacharyson at NumberFire. And that was like probably one of the best decisions I've ever made because JJ is like probably the best editor I've ever worked with. I was always really good with data, but never really like great at showing like the complex ideas and making them readable. And I would say he definitely helped out in that regard. So it's just kind of a crazy, crazy story, but you know, small project I started doing in college, and I'm lucky enough to be where I'm at now.
How amazing. How amazing. So when did the idea for Yards Created because it's like it's right there next to you, you know, it's right there next to you on your name practically.
Yards Created was probably a couple years after I started trying to write fantasy. So it was 2015. I've been writing fantasy articles since 2013, but not really full time until like 2016-ish. Yards Created was 2015, and honestly, you know, Matt Harmon and I kind of came up together, not together, but at the same time. And, you know, he was doing amazing stuff with Reception Perception. And one day I just messaged him. I'm like, hey dude, like what, if you were doing what you're doing for, receivers, if you just kind of translated that to running backs, like what would that look like for you? Because I had always like heard, you know, and we still do hear in like scouting reports, like, oh, this guy always goes down on first contact, or this guy's great at, you know, forcing missed tackles, but you never really saw a lot of like data for it. And now PFF has come to the forefront. They're doing amazing things in terms of the data front. But yeah, that was kind of the inspiration for it, is like, you know, I always wanted to have like some sort of like objective, you know, stats to put behind narratives.
How do you think it's evolved over the years since you published? I think it was 2016 was the first article you published under that.
Yeah, it's definitely changed a bit. You know, watching 1,000 carries every spring, that doesn't change. So the workload doesn't change, but I think the way I process the prospects has changed. And I think, you know, in today's NFL, we're going to hear countless pundits talk about positionless football. And I think running back is really transitioning that way too. You know, a lot of the guys, pretty much all of the guys, except for Derrick Henry, who have gotten, you know, major contract extensions in recent years, are all fantastic pass catchers and basically like hybrid players. So I think, you know, the process hasn't necessarily changed in the way that I'm charting hasn't changed. But I definitely think the players coming in have changed, and that's kind of evolved the way I, you know, for the lack of a better word, scout them.
Oh, that's cool. So, you know, the jump to create fantasy points, you know, was such a momentous one. I mean, kind of, it's been about a little more than a year now or thereabouts.
We're getting close. We're getting close to officially being a year. We actually started on 420, so we got a little celebration to do here in a couple of weeks.
So for, yeah, exactly 420. Hey, you guys started on 420. We started on May.
That's so Mayo, perfect.
So perfect timing. Perfect timing. So you know what brought you to make that jump, and now that you're coming close to the anniversary, I mean, how are you feeling about it? Especially doing it in such a crazy year.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I feel awesome about it now. Back in like July of last year, I was just super worried about not having a season. But yeah, very lucky that we got, you know, a full NFL season, and it went off basically, you know, as good as it possibly could have. But yeah, you know, the start of fantasy points was pretty simple. I mean, I got my first real like full-time paid job with Fantasy Guru, and that was, you know, John Hansen, Joe Dolan, Tom Brawley. That was back 2017. No, that was 2016. So I had known those guys and become good friends with those guys, you know, a long time ago. Ben Kukanis was the editor then, and now he's running the show at Fantasy Points. So for me, it was, you know, it was kind of a simple transition in the sense that like I love, you know, love those guys, love working with them. And they've always kind of treated me in a way where I kind of like, they just kind of give me like creative space to kind of do what I do. And, it's just worked out really well. And now it's bigger and better than ever. I mean, we just had this draft guide come out with an app, that has Greg Cosell's profiles in it, and our all of our staff ranks and staff mock and stuff. And, Ben said it in Slack the other day. He's like, this is like the coolest thing we've done as a group together. And it definitely is. So, honestly, it was kind of just a no brainer to kind of, work with friends and work with people that I, you know, love working with and respect so much. And, it's just going awesome.
You mentioned Greg Cosell. I mean, it's like every time I hear him interviewed or do a breakdown, it's just, it's enthralling. I can't help but just be like, oh my God, this guy knows so much. And I watched his uncle.
Yeah. Yeah. Howard was unbelievable on the mic. But yeah, Greg is, he's something else. Like Greg is, and I would say this is obviously I'll sound biased saying this, but Greg is my favorite analyst to listen to. His recall of plays is just unbelievable. I think he has like basically a photographic memory. It's absolutely insane. I mean, you can ask him about, you know, a touchdown that Trevor Lawrence threw in 2019 against, I don't know, Wake Forest or whatever. And, you know, he'd remember the exact play, the exact alignment, the exact coverage he was facing. Yeah, he's the man. And, you know, there's a reason he's the pinnacle, I think, of film analysis.
No, incredible. Incredible. And, you know, we're in kind of like the height of NFL draft season. And, you know, and I'm sure your yards created metric is getting just the crazy workout right now. Everybody's got the consensus going out that Najee Harris, Travis Etienne, and Javonte Williams are like that top tier. How do you kind of rank them right now? And do you have you seen any red flags in the 1,000 carries that you've seen?
Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. It's the clear top three. I think Harris is a tier above Etienne and Williams. I think actually Etienne and Williams are pretty close in that second tier. I've been thinking a lot about this the last couple of weeks. I was super busy in February, so I didn't get to do as much charting as I would have liked. But yeah, Harris, if you like stacked up Harris compared to the class last year, I think he would probably rank out as the second best prospect behind Taylor. Really the only thing Harris doesn't have is home run speed. Like he doesn't have the ability to like rip off, you know, a 75 yard touchdown and, you know, run away from safeties in the third level. But everything else with him is just unbelievable. And, you know, like I was talking about a little bit earlier is like one of the things I've been trying to hone way more in on is just how good of pass catchers these guys coming out are. And for a back of Harris's size, I mean, he is so fluid in the passing game. His ability to transition from catch to yards after the catch really is it's like a running back that's 30 pounds lighter. So I think Harris is I wouldn't say by far and away, because I think some teams will really be enamored with Etienne's speed and explosiveness, and for good reason. I think they'll end up getting drafted pretty closely. But I think Harris for me right now is pretty easily the number one running back in this class.
Oh, awesome. How about like outside of that top tier, are there any guys the top three, any guys that are really look favorably on the yards created?
Yeah. Well, to be honest with you, I think this class kind of stinks. After the top three, if I did grades, round grades, I think all of them would get like round four plus grades. Michael Carter will be someone to kind of monitor, I think, in that late second to third round pocket. I haven't done my full rankings yet, but I think Trey Sermon might end up being my RB4. He transferred obviously from Kansas to Ohio State. Obviously the Big Ten last year was a disaster with COVID and they had a really short year, but Trey Sermon had some awesome games. I think Harris is really the only like bell cow in this class who can be a true three down player. I think Etienne and Williams, it'll depend on where they go. But I think Trey Sermon has the ability to be a three down runner. He is super agile. So I think Sermon right now is kind of the guy that's flying under the radar a little bit.
Oh, okay. Any guys that it really doesn't like?
Right now, there's no real standouts. No one that really comes to mind that's like, you know, massively, it's the weird thing about this class is like everyone has their red flags. Like Kenneth Gainwell, for example, is never going to be a very strong inside runner. Like his game predicates on, you know, getting open in the passing game and being on the right team, getting on the right team where his, you know, ability can be, at least for fantasy, his ability can be used the right way. It's like everybody outside of that top three, everybody has their like little things, you know, like, you know, Chuba Howard obviously had a monster 2019 season and then got hurt in 2020. He's definitely going to fall in the draft and he's pretty much just like a one speed guy. It's going to be really interesting to see how the NFL values, these guys in like the RB4 to 12 range, because I think you could pretty much make an argument for any one of them.
And that's the thing. And, you know, and I was kind of looking through at places at potential landing spots.
Right.
Are you not, is it me or is it just, there aren't that many, at least definitely for bell cow spots, or as we like to call on our show, lead caballo.
Yeah, there's definitely not. You're absolutely right about that. I think the Falcons are one, the Jets are one, the Steelers are one, and that's kind of it. I would be shocked if the Falcons don't do something at running back during the draft. I've been wanting them to take Najee Harris at 36. I don't think we'll see a running back in the first round this year. You're right though. I mean, really there's like three or four clear cut ones. I think the Cardinals will absolutely draft a back. They've got to get a compliment to Chase Edmonds. But yeah, I mean, relative to how much opportunity there is at receiver, the running back, like, you know, available touches, that touch pool is, you know, it's going to be tight. And there's going to be some rookies that, you know, people love that go to spots and they just get buried.
That's the thing I'm worried about this class is just, you know, some guys that might have like a talent, maybe they're good at pass catching or maybe good at running, but, you know, or just running, maybe they're not stellar at both, that they might just, you know, kind of like, you had them a couple years ago and they're like a Darrell Henderson, yeah, something like that. So, well, for me, you kind of hinted at this when you mentioned that this class kind of stinks. Kind of, how does it compare to the 2020 class?
Well, the 2020 class was really top heavy. The top five, everybody had the same, you know, mm-hmm, names in their top five, but different orders to them. And those top five guys were all like, I thought, very strong, like second round picks, like early second round picks. And we saw them all fly off the board in that early second round. This class is like, I think Harris is an early second rounder. I think ETN is a mid second guy. Williams is too. And then after that, it's weak. You know, I have Sermon is like my guy that I'm really interested in to see where he goes. Like if he gets drafted by the Steelers in like the third or fourth round, I might be all in. But yeah, I mean, in terms of just stacking up, this class is a lot like the Josh Jacobs class in 2018, where Jacobs to me was the clear cut number one. We had Darrell Henderson, who was really interesting as like a second, third round pick. And then it was just a bunch of guys. I think this class is kind of comparable to that one.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I remember that class. Oh yeah. Well, for me, I'm big on year two for NFL players. Mm-hmm. For mostly a quarterback, because I feel like they figured it out a little bit more. But for the running backs, and you mentioned a little bit about last year's class being top heavy, a lot of those guys started to pop. The Cam Akers, Taylor, yep, had that huge second half, especially the playoff run. He probably won some people some money during that during those closing weeks. Are there some that you're kind of more bullish than others from that class?
Yeah. You know, Akers is going to be hyped out of control. I mean, I think Akers is probably going to end up being a pretty early second round pick when it's all said and done, when you're doing your draft in the summer. I'm interested to see where the public lands on Clyde Edwards-Helaire, because based on what I've seen from him as a runner, I thought his rookie tape was pretty damn good. I think, you know, obviously he got hurt at the end of the year. The touchdowns weren't there like we expected, because they do so much to scheme. Andy Reid does so much to scheme Kelsey and Hill open near the goal line to get them touchdowns. But, and I think Edwards-Helaire is going to be an interesting buy option. And, you know, I loved Edwards-Helaire coming out. I think I had him, I want to say third pre-draft, and then I elevated him to one because of the landing spot. Mm-hmm. So maybe I'm allowing some of that bias to seep back in, but I thought he answered every question as like, can he be an inside sustaining runner? I absolutely think he can. On the flip side, I think Dobbins might go overdrafted a little bit. That Ravens team loves Gus Edwards. They gave him a second round tender, I believe, which is a lot of money for a running back on an exclusive rights deal. They're going to continue to make that like a 300 monster. I mean, it's Jackson, it's Dobbins, it's Edwards. And until we see Lamar kind of check down more often, Dobbins receiving, you know, floor and ceiling is going to be, it's going to be a lot lower than someone like DeAndre Swift or Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Now you mentioned CEH. I'm glad you said that, because I kind of felt like for a little bit there that I was the only one who was thinking that he might do well. I often wonder, and this is kind of like the psychology of fantasy football players. It's like when a guy leaves for a little while, it's like he's gone forever. And I mean, yeah, he missed a few weeks. I feel like that always drops a guy's value. I feel like he could be a guy who could be a big value in the second or third round next year. And I mean, he's still going to catch a bunch of balls.
Yeah. And that, you know, that was the thing I was a little bit surprised with Reed is he didn't get Edwards-Helaire involved as much as a pass catcher as I thought he would. And I think a big part of that is like when you got Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, I mean, they're the best duo maybe we've ever seen. I think that's a big part of it. I also think Mahomes is just super aggressive, doesn't check down very much. So that plays a part in it. But, you know, just going back and like looking through the data and watching the tape, like Edwards-Helaire didn't run a lot of like complex routes. It was a lot of like check and releases, going to the flat. Hopefully they get him more involved on some of the routes that I know he can run from LSU, because I mean, he was getting open at will on a pretty diverse route tree, in college.
Yeah. Think about that. You know, all those Kansas City guys could even Mahomes, cause someone's going to draft Mahomes at the end of the first or the second round.
It's going to happen
in every league.
Yep.
Those guys are going to be gone by the third round. So, yep. It's amazing. Well, that kind of leads to my next question, because I feel like every year fantasy football lessons are learned that are applied to the next season. And one of the big lessons for me that I learned last year that I really felt like was reinforced was that elite tight end, Kelce. I mean, every team that did well had Kelce on it. And also the Konami Code quarterbacks. You know, is there anything that kind of like you're updating or evolving in your analysis and kind of your own personal drafting?
Yeah,
that you're applying to this year.
I definitely undervalued Kelce last year, 100%, and Darren Waller. Those were two big misses for me. Waller is not going to be a 6th round pick this year. I'll tell you that. He's going to be a 2nd, 3rd round pick in most drafts. Same with Kittle, even though he's coming off the injury. So you're spot on about tight ends. And yeah, I mean, with quarterbacks now, we've got this influx, and we'll have even more between Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence, and Zach Wilson can move too. All of these guys have fantastic scrambling ability, not only just on like, you know, design plays, but, you know, just making second reaction plays. So that's a trend that's just only going to continue. You know, it's going to be really hard for guys like Tom Brady and Kirk Cousins to finish as top 10 quarterbacks when they're statues now. But for me, I think the biggest lesson I've learned over the last couple of years is just how deep receiver is. You want to be like, I think for me, my biggest takeaway last year beyond the, you know, the tight ends and the quarterbacks was that I think I've been overdrafting running backs and overvaluing them just a little bit. Especially in leagues where you start 3 receivers in multiple flex spots. Most of the time you're going to want to have receivers in those spots. And I think consistency at receiver is just so overblown. Like even DeAndre Hopkins throws up duds. But by and large, like the access to get those 20 to 25 point games largely comes from receivers. So I think with, you know, this is another really fun receiver class too, where I mean, we're going to have 4 or 5 rookies that are probably going to be impact players week 1. I just think receivers gotten to a point where it's just crazy. And like you want to be 6-7 deep, and give yourself options, especially like I said, in leagues where you're starting, you have the option to start at least 3 to 4 receivers.
I know that's one thing I didn't mention it on there, but also that the other thing is kind of giving myself flexibility. I've been running back.
Yep.
And everything like the last couple of years, it's just like they're it's such crucible. It's such a battle of attrition, you know, in the first couple of rounds. And you know, I was so hot on Josh Jacobs last year.
Okay.
Because I thought he was going to be a find in the second round, at the back half of the first round, early second round.
Yeah.
I was one of my most competitive league. He got picked right before me. So I was just like, all right, I'll take Devontae Adams instead.
So, that worked out well.
That worked out very well. So that almost was kind of freeing, thinking, okay, you know what? Maybe a modified zero RB strategy is something to think about.
Yeah, and that's my thing is like in drafts, like you never want to go into a draft with a set strategy. You know, you'll have an idea of where players are going to go in ADP ranges. But yeah, I mean, things like that can happen. I mean, you can be targeting Jacobs. Yeah, I was targeting Miles Sanders in that range last year, and that was ooh, that one touch did. And go. That was touch and go. He had a couple games there. Honestly, it was just like the Jacobs pick. I mean, they both had a couple solid games, and They definitely did not return that ADP, but yeah, you know, I think this year is going to be another top heavy, in terms of best ball and redraft in the first 24, 30 picks, or it's going to be pretty running back heavy again. So if you're out there still grinding the zero RB grindstone, it's going to be another good year for you, because I think we're going to see a lot of running backs go off the board.
Yeah, I think receiver is deep, but yeah, I think I'm willing to. I got lucky enough with Antonio Gibson late, and then Cam Akers.
That was a
late,
big one. Yep.
That I was just kind of like, okay, you know what? Let's kind of play around with that a little more.
Gibson was a league winner last year. I mean, until he got hurt, he was just every week like that. When they finally made him the starter, you know, that 2 to 3 weeks before the season started, his ADP, skyrocketed from like the 11th round to like the 6th, 7th. And even then he was undervalued. I mean, he was awesome.
Oh, Thanksgiving when he blew up against the Cowboys was just glorious. Glorious. For my next one, you kind of hinted at one of the players I was going to ask you about for the next one. I hear you're a big proponent of BMI. So,
oh man,
thanks, so, yeah. Mi hermano, gracias for that one. Graham, I'm giving you the floor. Say whatever you'd like to say about that, and feel free to expound on Devontae Smith as much as you'd like.
Edwin knows 10 times more about this. And I was actually asking him about this last week, you know, just like the knock against Devontae Smith is that he's really skinny, and he is, and that's a legitimate concern. But at the same time, I feel like, you watch him. Sure, he didn't face a lot of press coverage at Alabama, but I mean, the effortlessness he has at getting open. The game has changed so much at receiver. Like, this is why I think Matt Harmon's reception perception is so important, is like getting open and gaining separation is like the number one, two, and three thing you should be looking for when you're scouting receivers. Like, no matter the size, like if these guys can get open independent of their scheme, which is kind of an oxymoron, but that's a whole nother can of worms. That's what matters most. And Devontae Smith gets open, and almost unlike any receiver I've seen in the last 6 or 7 years. It's kind of the whole Calvin Ridley debate over again. I mean, like, Ridley got open at Alabama and at will. He didn't have the best production profile because he was sitting behind a bunch of really talented players. Same thing can be said for Devontae Smith, but on BMI, it's just, and I think Edwin probably would say the same thing. I hope it's just a flawed thing. Like, Edwin made a great point. He was talking about how it just doesn't measure body fat. Like, you know, if you're 6 feet tall and 200 pounds, but you're ripped, you're still going to be overweight according to BMI. I think, you know, BMI came out ages ago, you know, and there's just so many better ways to like measure frame and measure muscle density than just a simple BMI metric. I just think the Devontae Smith debate is an interesting one. He definitely doesn't come without downside because he is, you know, 6'1", 175 pounds, whatever he is. There's legitimate concerns that he might get beat up against press man corners. But in today's NFL, with all the motion these teams are using, especially sharp teams, like the 49ers, the Rams, they do an incredible job at getting their Z and slot receivers open with motion and just personnel formation. So the idea that Devontae Smith is a bad player because he's not great against press coverage, man, in the NFL, he might only face press coverage like 15% of the time. And his BMI at that point won't really matter because he's going to get wide ass open. that's my whole thing is like, I just think some of the BMI stuff is so black and white. And it's just focusing on the most like narrow lens of these players, and there's a lot more that goes into it than just a weight number.
And that's the funny thing. Edwin put that up on Twitter the other day, and I threw out the BMI is what scouts and other people use to justify not to take Devonta Smith, and so that they could justify when he becomes an all-star or all-pro player, or Pro Bowl player, that he's he's a small guy, so he's not going to last or something like that. If the guy can play football, the guy can play football.
Yeah, and you know, Chad Johnson, I love Chad Johnson on Twitter. Mm. Like, he had this bit a couple years ago. He was watching Devonta Adams tape and he like filmed himself. He was like crying because he was like, Devonta Adams is so good. But he's been saying the same thing about Devonta. He's like, man, I played at like 180. And they're the very similar frames, very skinny. Mm. They use a lot of footwork to get open. And Devonta Smith is very similar. I mean, it's crazy to think that a guy can go for nearly 120 catches, nearly 2,000 yards, and score over 20 touchdowns, and people think he sucks, like, against the best competition in college football.
That's the thing. It's like, you know, he's going up against guys who are going to get drafted along with him.
Yep. So absolutely.
And he was beating those guys like a drum. So,
and what gets me too, just not to go off in too much of a tangent, but like, I watched more than half of Najee Harris's carries this year, right? So I saw a good bit of Devonta Smith blocking. The dude doesn't block like he's 170 pound guy. I mean, he is a physical player, and he uses, I mean, he tries. I mean, he's absolutely, it's not like he's getting road graded in the run game. Like, he is definitely a lot more physical than he's given credit for.
Oh, I'd love to hear that. I don't watch that closely to see receiver blocking. I listen to people like you who say that. So, but no, that's a good thing. That's the thing to me. I don't know. What I'll close with on that front was when on the pro day he ran a fly route.
Yeah,
and he just looked different. Yeah. He just looked different, and Mac Jones hit him in stride and everything like that, and I mean everybody, but he just looked like he moved different, and he was so smooth and so electric.
Yeah, exactly. He moves at a different. At a different speed than a lot of receivers do. It's just effortless for him.
No, it's beautiful. I'm going to grab him wherever I can. So I'll take a chance on him.
Yeah. Hopefully he goes to a team where he gets a lot of targets. Cause there's that top 15. It's tight. There's going to be some competition. I mean, if he slides back to like Arizona, that'd be pretty fun.
Ooh, wow. To see the possibility of him getting 100 targets somewhere would be, be very interesting.
For sure.
Ooh, I'd love to see Miami. Part of me, I've always got a soft spot for Miami, but
yeah,
we'll see what they do there. You talk about so much of the numbers that you get into. What are some of your favorite analytics that you go through? And maybe which ones do you, I've also heard you say that there are some that are a little bit on the overrated side.
Yeah. Yeah, the biggest thing with analytics is knowing what's noise and what's not, like knowing what's predictive and what's not. And that can be very hairy at times. For fantasy, like for running backs, as much as I sit and love to talk about, you know, footwork and this guy, you know, can create this many yards or, you know, force this many tackles through speed or whatever. At the end of the day, for fantasy, like, what really matters is snaps, and what really, really matters is targets. Like Scott Barrett, who I work with at Fantasy Points, he's been on top of this for years, like ahead of the game for years. Like, targets are worth three times more fantasy points than carries if you play in PPR leagues. So like, just off the bat, knowing what to look for is the most important thing. But analytically speaking, my favorite metric for like receivers is yards per route run. Pro Football Focus started this a long time ago, and pretty much all the best receivers are up there in yards gained per route run. I think it's pretty much the best efficiency, like catch-all one number efficiency metric for receivers. And you'll be shocked to know Devonta Smith is high up there in yards per route run.
Big shocker. Big shocker.
Yeah.
Oh man. And on the running back side, you were talking about touches and what would be kind of some of the ones that are on the a little overrated?
Yeah. Efficiency, just yards per carry. You know, yards per carry is super noisy by and large. I mean, average runners average like 4.2, 4.3 yards per carry. If you have a running back that's slightly under average, like Leonard Fournette in yards per carry, but he's getting a ton of touches. Like, yeah, sure, he's not going to, you know, he's not ripping off those sexy 20-yard, 25-yard explosive runs, but he's still extremely valuable for our game. So I think pretty much every efficiency metric for running backs as it relates to fantasy is overrated.
And do you agree with me? I mean, you know, you come from a baseball background. I come from a baseball background too. Is the NFL catching up to the baseball in the crazy stat department?
They have a long way to go. I still think it's definitely getting a lot better. I would definitely, as much as some of these coaches and GMs say they don't use analytics, it's, you can tell just in the players they're drafting and just kind of the way they're transitioning away from just thinking of football like statically, like, oh, this is my scheme, I'm going to run this scheme regardless of who the players are. That's changing. And I think analytically speaking, that's where the numbers are kind of influencing that. But no, baseball is still it's funny, like I love baseball, but baseball has kind of been broken by analytics. Like it really has been. Like some of the enjoyability factor, like I don't know how you feel about this, but like watching third baseman play like shallow right field on some of these, like, yeah, you're shaking your head. You feel the same way. It's just weird, right?
I want them in whatever the next thing that they do. I want to mandate that two fielders on each side of second base. Yeah. I think you need that, and I'd love to see, make them say that they've got to have their foot in the dirt. I hate that. To me, and I'm a National League guy. Okay. And so I grew up not saying I hate the DH like Crash Davis, but I've come to the party because they don't bunt anymore. So the only people who bunt are the pitchers. So let's just get rid of it altogether. And the thing that I hate about analytics is that it's pretty much taken away the stolen base.
Yep.
So that to me is the tough part. And I'll tell you what. Even though it helped the Dodgers win the World Series, pulling Blake Snell when they did in Game 6 last year, if I see in the NFL that they're pulling Patrick Mahomes in the third quarter, you know, because he's pitching too, you know, he's throwing too, that to me, come on, guys, that dude was so locked in.
That Snell decision is a catch-22, right? Because like the Rays had used and gotten right so many calls analytically about when to pull pitchers. Hey, we're going to make this a bullpen game. We're going to use this lefty against this righty, whatever. They had gotten it right so many times. But the Snell decision against that lineup, the way he was mowing them down, I get the whole, you know, I get the analytics behind you don't want to have your pitcher face the lineup for a third time. I get all of that. But you're absolutely right with Snell. Like, man, you're trying to win the World Series. This dude isn't allowing any hard contact whatsoever. Like, at least give him a couple batters. And if he gives up, you know, a big double, then you pull him. You know, give him a chance to at least get through that lineup for that third time.
Plus, it was the next two guys up, he'd struck them out both times the previous time. So it's just, but again, you know, I'm still waiting on the parade out here in LA. So, but it's all good. It's all good. Yeah. We definitely enjoyed that night. I could get into a baseball tangent anytime. For you personally, what's your favorite format to play in fantasy football? Mm-hmm. Redraft, dynasty, single, double, two QB.
Yeah. I'd say dynasty just because it's a little more like strategic long-term. And I play against some of my best friends, you know, Scott and I are in a couple leagues. It's always fun to kind of just compete long term and see the different team building outlooks for dynasty. But honestly, you know, my favorite league that I play in is my longest one. I've been in this league since like seventh, eighth grade. Just some friends back from Jacksonville and. My dad's in it. One of his best friends is in it. His son's in it. We're good friends. Like, so just honestly, I love all types of fantasy, but I mean, dynasty's become more, I guess more fun for me just because it's just different strategically, but I still love the classic redraft leagues.
Oh yeah. The classic. Yeah. Our family league that spawned the Familia FFB is a classic single QB. I still can't convince my cousin, the commissioner, to change it from standard to either PPR or half.
Oh,
PPR.
No, you got to get it to go at least half PPR. Come on.
I'm trying. I'm one of the older guys and I'm the ones bringing ideas, and I'm getting the old goat kind of like, oh, we've done it like this for this way forever. I'm still trying to get him to also get rid of the kicker. So,
oh man, kicker. But, I would much rather, how do you feel about this? Would you rather have a kicker or a defense? Cause I'd rather have a kicker.
I almost feel like a defense is more predictable though.
Yeah.
That's fair. And like the kicker, I think it's fun, but man, I hate relying on those guys. I want to get rid of both of them. I started playing more no kicker, no defenses leagues last year. And it was so, eye-opening and,
That's the way to do it, is to get rid of the defense and kicker and add a couple extra flex spots.
I agree. That's how I ended up with Chase Claypool in my last flex spot on his monster week, just because I had that extra spot.
There you go. That'll do it.
And how about single or super single QB or super flex?
Yeah, I think quarterback scoring is kind of broken in a way, because we touched on a little bit ago. Like, if you're not a running quarterback, it's pretty hard for you to have like a top 8, top 10 season. Jalen Hurts is going to be another litmus test for this. Like, Jalen Hurts might only complete like 55% of his throws and average like under 7 yards per attempt, but he is a legitimate shot at being a top 8 quarterback. So, that said, I think super flex is a good enough band-aid for quarterback scoring, because it gives you, there's so many quarterbacks on a weekly basis that are in play, 18 to 20 pretty much every week, that you can rely on for, unpredictable floor of points. Super flex is a lot of fun. A lot of my dynasty leagues are actually super flex. My favorite, I should have said this from the get-go. My favorite though is auction leagues. Auction leagues take a lot of time during the draft. But my favorite drafts to do are auction leagues. Like, Joe Dolan and Tom Brawley and I were in two auction leagues together, and it's always like my favorite nights of the year is like just going up against those guys and seeing, it's just a different way of valuing players. So, I would say if you're into fantasy and haven't tried an auction league, definitely check that out.
Auction is the way to go. It's got to be done. I love the being done in 2 hours, but I also love being having things take several hours. So I think it's more strategic. So
way more strategic. Yeah,
so much more fun. So kind of looking into the crystal ball and really considering the growing popularity and the states that are adopting sports betting and DFS, kind of do you see the fantasy industry kind of becoming a little bit more ingrained with sports gambling?
Absolutely. And I think it's already starting, in particular with the NFL. We're going to see player props become like maybe the most popular form of gambling. Not in terms of money spent, but just like overall what content needs to be provided for it, because we're heading towards, and it's, state governments have their own agendas and stuff, but we're going to be heading towards the next 5 to 6 years where half of the country will have some form of legal gambling. It's just a matter of getting the right money in the right people's pockets. I absolutely think fantasy is heading towards that lens. I think for the NFL, just in particular, I mean, there's going to be so many different ways to bet, player props. And I hope it becomes more of like a peer-to-peer type of thing. So like, if you and I disagree on how many yards Calvin Ridley is going to have, like, you can put $10 on, hey, I think he's going to have 85 and I think it'll be under that or whatever. I hope we trend that way, where it's a lot more like fun and friendly back to back. But I definitely think sports gambling, man, it's the wave of the future, and it's going to be like magnitudes more profitable for everyone involved than like DFS and even season.
Amazing. I actually, last year was the first year I really played DFS really hard. And I felt like it made me better, made my analysis better, because everything was just so matchup based, and it getting deeper into like the, you know, finding the quarterback. So I can't wait to see the next evolution.
I think that's right about DFS, because you notice way more about the game and the nuances of the game and the randomness of the game, and you appreciate that more by playing DFS. So I'm with you on that.
No, totally. So I'm still in kind of my first year of content creation for fantasy football, and I feel like I'm learning all the time. So, I mean, you know, you've been doing it for, you know, a lot longer than me. I mean, kind of what would you give me and other content creators who are starting out, especially kind of like when it comes to distribution of like my time and effort between Sure. writing and podcasting and social media and anything else?
Sure. Off the top, I would definitely say be yourself and find a niche. Which you've done. Absolutely, you've done that. I think so many people now are focused on building a brand and having the loudest voice in the room. And yeah, sometimes your tweet will go viral by doing that. But long-term, being yourself and letting the brand build itself based on how you view, you know, the NFL, baseball, whatever it is, that's the number one thing. And then finding a niche, finding something, you know, knowing something that you're really strong at and really honing in on it. You know, a lot of the times we can improve our weaknesses, but it's a lot easier when you're starting to really focus on your strengths and know what you're good at, know what you're comfortable with, and build off of that from there. As far as time allotment goes, that's a tough one, because, you know, if you're really good at podcasting like yourself, focus on that. But, you know, if you've don't feel comfortable, you don't have a very strong feel for how your voice is or whatever, focus on other mediums. You know, I still think, you know, YouTube is an incredible platform where you can have very short form videos and you don't have to be super long winded. I hate to say it because I love writing, but man, like, just it takes so much time to write an article. And no one reads it. Like, no one on Twitter, the analytics on Twitter for link clicks. And I think this is in part because of the algorithm, but I also think it's in part because just how our brains work. It's way down. Like, readership is just way down. People are not reading articles. Like, if they see an article that's 800 or more words, they're like, yep, nope, I'm good. I don't have enough time for that. So, I hate to say it, but like, definitely finding ways for short-term video. Podcasts are great. That's where I would be focusing my time on. And, you know, you can write super concise articles that get to the point and get your readers knowing what they need to know quickly. That can definitely be done, but that's certainly a skill too, is being able to be, you know, brief but still detailed.
That's the one thing. I mean, writing is my background. I mean, obviously I was a sports writer for a long time. And so that to me, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I've been trying to, I found myself writing these 2,500 word articles, and I'm just kind of like, I'm pouring over it and I'm like, oh, but I want to get into that 500 to 800, maybe chopping that up into like, you know, four or five different articles. I think that's going to have to be the way to go. Okay. So you've lived in California, so I know mm-hmm. you've had access to good tacos. So, yes. I know there are places that you mentioned, but let's rank your favorite taco meats.
Yes. I gotta say off the top, any other city is inferior for tacos and Mexican food in general. I'm quite fond of barbacoa. I never tried barbacoa until I moved to LA. Barbacoa is freaking awesome. Then you got, obviously, like, it depends. Like, I love spicy stuff. So I fell in love with chorizo pretty quickly. Carne asada is always good. It's an always good go-to. I mean, you can always do, like, you know, carne asada and pescado. I love chicken tinga. I'd never had chicken tinga before, but chicken tinga, when it's done right, is incredible. Like, that's probably, honestly, that's probably my favorite, is chicken tinga.
It's exactly. I don't know if you did you have a guisados anywhere nearby you?
I think I tried them once with a buddy. I cannot remember what I got.
Because they had they have an incredible chicken tinga.
Yeah, I think I tried them once. I'm trying to remember. Ah, man. That all I know is there's this taco truck that was right down the street on Venice from where we were at. And they had this every night I'd have a couple beers, be like, damn, I'm hungry. I'm going to go get some chicken tinga tacos. And they were like literally out of this world good. And they're like $2. It's like, it's the best.
taco trucks in LA, there's just nothing that catches that touches them. It's just fantastic. Just absolutely fantastic.
Oh, the food and culture in LA is really, it's unbelievable. It's so good. I never had a bad meal.
It's so funny. Like Mauricio asked me, I had him on recently too. And he asked me, well, you have good Mexican food in LA. I said, yeah, but you know, I'll have to go to Mama Martin's house and I get the best and no line.
No line. That's the key. That's the key.
Oh man. Well, Graham, I mean, I think we've had more fun than should be allowed, man, but kind of closing it out. I mean, and you kind of touched on this earlier, but kind of how often do you kind of step back and kind of think how cool it is to be working on fantasy football for a job and especially launching your own company with fantasy points?
Literally every day. I'm really not joking. Literally every day. I always have these like little pinch me moments where like, I just never really feel like I'm working. Like I'm just kind of, doing my passion. Having the flexibility to do what you want is super liberating. But yeah, still to me, like every day I'm thankful to like, you know, do what I do, work with friends, work with people I love. And yeah, it's definitely been a fun journey for sure. And it's legitimately the best job in the world. Like even during the grind of the season where, you know, from like pretty much like August 1st until the new year, we're grinding like 60, 70 hours a week. But even then, like there's days where it's a slog and you're exhausted, but I never complain just because I know I'm so fortunate to do what I do. And, I just feel so lucky.
Oh man. Well, I mean, you're a pleasure to follow. I mean, it was awesome to have you as a guest. I mean, hopefully this is the beginning of more conversations, down the road, but,
absolutely.
You know, I'm familia, this is todo for our show. Graham, send us where to find you. I know we don't need to look far, but also kind of I know you're still grinding on Yards Created.
Yeah.
Tell us what's coming up.
Yeah, I'm at Graham Barfield on Twitter. You can find all of my my work at Fantasy Points and all the work from Edwin and Joe, Tom, Scott, John. All of our stuff at fantasypoints.com. Like I said, I think I mentioned earlier, but our draft guide is up and out. Over 100 player prospects from the great Greg Cosell. We got a staff rookie ranks in there. It's only $25. So if you want pretty much the best draft guide you can get, check it out. $25. We've got a Apple app. We've got an Android app for it too. So you can kind of just streamline it on your phone and, you know, lead up to the draft, you know who your play, you know, who your teams are going to pick and kind of get an idea for it. But yeah, fantasypoints.com, that's where it's at.
Oh man. Well, he's not only a great analyst, he's also a great businessman. So, made a great move going out there, my friend. It's awesome. And, thanks again, familia. Thanks again to Anchor for being our hosting network and making sure our independent podcast gets out to the familia community. Please make sure to subscribe and leave us a review. And, you can find original content from our side at familiaffb.com. And, remember to follow us at familiaffb. You can follow me at JorgeMartin17 on Twitter and also our familia FB Facebook page. Graham, otra vez, gracias. Gracias otra vez, my friend. And everybody remember, todos somos familia.